So we are continuing our series this morning on Nehemiah. We are focusing on Nehemiah 6. If you want to turn there this morning, we will be reading a lot of that. I'll be sharing some specifically. I have some on slides, but whenever I was thinking about that, I kind of was thinking about what distractions do I have in my life, and I know personally I have different all kinds of different distractions. I mean, of course, there's the internet. That's a big distraction. It's a big time waster. There's all different kinds of things. But one of the things that kind of came to my mind was my children. They can be a distraction at times. Who has kids? Yeah, they're new for me. But I found that I have one individual child that's more of a distraction than the other. If anybody else has had a child like that, my distracting child is William. He distracts me because he's just so interesting. He's got a very interesting personality. He's a very unique child, and he knows that, and we embrace it. And I shared this with our friends the other day, how distracting he can be a little bit. And we made him some, him and Wendell, they both love popcorn, and we were watching a movie, and we made them some popcorn, and we gave it to them. They're sitting on their blanket because we have carpet and can't get anything on the carpet because it's new and we paid for it, and it's going to last forever, right? And so they're sitting on their blanket eating their popcorn, and I'm on probably playing a video game on my little handheld while they're watching their kid movie. And I look over and I just see William sitting, kind of crouching, squatting a little bit, eating his popcorn very interestingly. And it was very distracting because he's just sitting there kind of zoned in watching the movie. And it almost reminded me of a gorilla kind of squatting there, slowly eating popcorn with his fingers. And it was very interesting, very funny. I kind of took a video of it. Mel thought I was crazy. I sent it to my friends, and I was like, look at my son. I mean, it was very interesting, and I got a good laugh out of it. He got a good laugh out of it when I showed him the video, but he can be a little distracting, and that's kind of what we're looking at today. And so how many of you have unfinished projects at home? I know Dan does. Dan, how's your project coming at home?
Slow but steady.
Slow but steady. You know, there's a big distraction in your life, right? It's called work.
There are several.
If you quit on your vacations going up in the mountains in your semi, then you probably have more time to finish your...
I actually do work harder when I'm on vacation.
So... we all have these distractions in our life. We can get sidetracked by things, okay? It takes tenacity to finish what we start sometimes, okay? Because there's always so many competing distractions that we have. One thing that clearly emerges as we look at the book of Nehemiah is the life is a battle, in the book of Nehemiah, is that life is a battle from beginning to end, okay? We kind of get to see, it's not quite Nehemiah's whole life because we kind of come in as an adult for Nehemiah, but we see him going through his life as an adult and all the challenges that he's facing. If we look at Ephesians 6:12, the Apostle Paul warned that our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the powers of this dark world, okay? We meet these powers of darkness in our text today, or in our text this morning. We're going to be looking at them. Here in Nehemiah 6, as in many other places in Scripture, we learn that the devil has two main ways of working, okay? The first is a tactic, this first tactic is fear, okay? Satan is prowling around, as Peter says in 1 Peter 5:8, like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Okay, he has fear. But he has another battle plan as well. And that other one is, it's not fear, he uses flattery. Okay, and that's kind of what we're going to be looking at today. 2 Corinthians 11:14 reveals that Satan masquerades as an angel of light. Okay? Oh, angel of light, that's a good thing, right? Well, not always, because he's portraying it instead of actually being it. He comes with an enticing promise, church, and flattering words, assuring us that what he possesses will cost us nothing. Okay? Which is not true. Whatever method the evil one employs, whether it be fear or flattery, his aim is one thing, is to destroy us, to distract us, okay? We need to be on our guard against each of these approaches. As believers, we will be distracted by the enemy. That is why Paul says in 2 Corinthians 2:11 that we are not unaware of his schemes. We shouldn't be unaware of his schemes because they are real, and we need to know that they are real. We need to be on guard because Satan is both a lion that devours and a serpent that deceives, okay? So this morning, we're going to look at three ways that Satan tries to distract us, okay? And the first one we're going to look at is intrigue, okay? So since Sanballat and his sinister buddies failed in their attempt to stop the wall builders, they decided now to concentrate their attack specifically on Nehemiah himself. They're changing their tactics now, okay? And they're resorting to subtle persuasion, okay? So they tried a full-on attack. They tried attacking their the workers specifically, and now they're focusing specifically on Nehemiah. We might call this kind of attack more of a softball, a political softball attack, okay? You will experience this as well when you try to correct some things in your own life, okay? Many people today are faltering in their Christian pilgrimage because they listen to the vice and temptation of those closest to them, okay? Which we should be able to rely on people close to us. But we can't let those people define our relationship with God. Let's look at Nehemiah 6, 1 through 4, and let's read that together. So Nehemiah 6, 1 through 4 says, "When Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem, the Arab, and the rest of the enemies heard that I had rebuilt the wall and no breach remained in it, even though up to that time I had not positioned doors in the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent word to me saying, 'Come on, let's set up a time to meet together at Kepharim in the plain of Ono.' Now they intended to do me harm. So I sent messengers to them saying, 'I am engaged in an important work and I am unable to come down. Why should the work come to a halt when I have to leave it to come down to you?' They contacted me four times in this way, and I responded the same way each time." So, these enemies suddenly become Nehemiah's friend, right? Okay? They're coming off more as a friend here. And they invite him to a conference, per se, a little get-together down in the plain of Ono. Okay? The first four verses look like a political concession speech. Okay? They want to meet with Nehemiah and cut their losses. Or so it seems, right? So they invite him to Ono, which is located on the seacoast near the Gaza Strip. It was a beautiful resort area back in the day. And so it wasn't like they were inviting him to a bad place. That was part of the intrigue. They were inviting them to a nice place, okay? But you know what Nehemiah sensed? He sensed danger. He felt like something was wrong. So Nehemiah said, "Oh no," to "Oh no," okay? Some commentators suggest that they were trying to trick him into leaving Jerusalem, where he had armed support, to come to a conference where he could be ambushed. Nehemiah evidently sensed this, right? He firmly declines, saying in verse 3, I am carrying out a great project, and I cannot go down. Why should the work stop when I leave? It will go down, leave while I leave it and go down to you. So Nehemiah has a great answer here, even though it sounds rather blunt. He's straight to the point, but it's a good answer. Nehemiah sees, he sees these men and their schemes that they're doing by refusing their invitation four different times, okay? So not only are they intriguing him, but they're persistent, right? So we as well may experience continued pressures to change our mind and go along with something that is wrong, okay? We see Christianity kind of becoming something that doesn't look right to us, right? We can see that in different ways in different areas. And it's surrounding us as a culture that it starts to kind of influence what we actually understand Christianity to be. But that's not true. Christianity is strongly in the Bible, and that's where we need to believe. So some of us give in to repeated pressures. I know when my children ask me over and over and over for something, I always say no, right? Well, most of the time. But every now and then, I do give in, usually when their mother's not looking. But we do find ourselves in those situations, okay? We might decline the first invitation, but we find our defense weakened as the enticement continues, okay? We keep getting enticed. We keep getting invited. It just won't stop. But Nehemiah persists in his refusal because he knows what his priorities are. He says, I am doing a great work. I have a great calling here. God has committed a tremendous project to me, and if I leave, it will be threatened. Okay? Which is all true, which is more of a reason not to go, but that still doesn't make it untrue. Sometimes these distractions, church, can come disguised as harmless options or even good things. There are many things that distract us from what's really important, church. Things like meetings, sports, TV, reading, the internet, friends, they can all really encompass any of these things. We can be distracted by anything, okay? And ultimately, it comes down to these are our temptations, right? One of the most helpful things that we can do to resist temptation is to remember that God has called each of us to a great task, like Nehemiah did. We are called to do what? We're called to make a kingdom impact, church. To live our lives to glorify God. In her book, A Practical Guide to Prayer, Dorothy Haskins tells about a noted concert violinist who was asked the secret of her mastery of the instrument, okay? This is what she said. There are many things that used to demand my time. When I went to my room after breakfast, I made my bed, straightened the room, dusted, and did whatever seemed necessary. When I finished my work, I turned to my violin practice. That system prevented me from accomplishing what I should on the violin. So I reversed things. I deliberately planned to neglect everything else until my practice period was complete. And that program of planned neglect is the secret to my success. Babe, that's why I don't make the bed anymore. I've got to neglect some things. No. Church, in a similar way, though, we've been called to a great task, right? One that we have to prioritize as a church, as individuals, or we'll be distracted. We'll be distracted from accomplishing that great task. If we don't practice some plan neglect per se, or other things, even good things, will get in the way. We'll be distracted from God's plan. We'll be distracted from what God deems best. Okay? So we see that that's what Nehemiah does here, right? He's involved in a great work, and he's not going to forsake it for anything else, anything less. Okay? So this takes us to the second distraction that the enemy uses. He uses innuendo. Okay? When the enemy cannot accomplish his purpose by offering peace, he switches back to his original scheme of sinister threats, okay? He moves from political softball to political hardball, per se. So let's take a look at verses 5 through 7. He says, "The fifth time that Sanballat sent his assistant to me in this way, he had an open letter in his hand. Written in it were the following words. Among the nations, it is rumored, and Geshem had sustained this, that you and the Jews have intentions of revolting, and for this reason you are building the wall. Furthermore, according to these rumors, you are going to become their king. You have also established prophets to announce in Jerusalem on your behalf. We have a king in Judah. Now the king is going to hear about these rumors. So come on, let's talk about this." So we kind of see here a little bit of almost an arm-twisting tactic. It's designed to pressure Nehemiah to yield to their request, right? And thus fall into their trap. Okay? But you know what he does? He resists because he sees it for what it really is, church. An enticement based upon lies. And that's exactly what it was. If you note that it was an unsealed, they specifically state it was an unsealed letter. Okay? In other words, it was designed for everyone to be able to read. Okay? So that the lie would be spread around that Nehemiah was trying to make himself king. It was an attempt to get a false claim out there in a very subtle way, right? Oh, we're just sending this letter to you, but it's not sealed, so anybody could read it. It was a subtle way to get Nehemiah in their trap. Have you ever noticed that rumors regularly cite people of distinction as source, okay? That's what happened here. It says, as Geshem says, it's true. So they throw in a notable name there, Geshem, to make the claim seem more real. Someone has said that gossip is news you have to hurry to tell someone about before you find out it's not true. Okay? And that's what's happening here. So, we see Nehemiah respond three different ways, church. He denied the rumor, he prayed to God for strength, and he went back to work. If we look at verse 8, it says, "I sent word back to him, 'We are not engaging in these activities you are describing. All of this is a figment of your imagination.'" So he sends back word. And then, as with he has practiced many times, he responds with another prayer, okay? Which we've seen Nehemiah do many times before. So verse 9 says, "All of them were wanting to scare us, supposing their hands will grow slack from the work and it won't get done. So now strengthen my hands." He's praying. He's seeking God to support him. Their tactics were to get the people to think something, right? To think that Nehemiah had some hidden motive, okay? His own glory was his motive. That's why he left and came to Jerusalem. That's why he's making these people build this wall, for him to become a king. That's not the truth. That's not the case, though. They were hoping this would cause the workers to be discouraged and quit. But it doesn't happen like that. And we'll see that as we continue on. And we see Nehemiah doing what he has done many times, to simply pray. Okay, church? He says, Lord, do not let this happen. Strengthen me to work all the harder. In spite of all these attacks, help me to work even harder, God. They were on the last lap of the race, and the finish line was in sight. They were close to being done with this wall. He took care of his character and trusted God to take care of his reputation. He didn't take care of his own reputation, right? He gave it over to God to take care of. So, this brings us to our last distraction that Satan uses, which is intimidation. So, once again, the enemy switches his game plan in verse 10. Let's read that together. He says, then I went to the house of Shammai, son of Deliah, the son of Metabal. He was confined to his home. He said, let's set up a time to meet in the house of God within the temple. Let's close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. It will surely be at night that they will come to kill you. So now the false prophet claims to have hidden knowledge. These men, well, now they have new information for Nehemiah. Okay? This is suggested by the phrase, he was shut in at his home. He was secluding himself for some religious reason. This is frequently the case, church, with those who claim to be psychics, who are in touch with the invisible world. We find them sitting behind curtains in semi-darkness, trying to create a sense of mystery, as though they know more about something than they actually do. Okay? But what they're saying here kind of sounding a little logical, right? They say, some people are out to get you. They're going to kill you. Well, Nehemiah has every right to believe that. Okay? The man suggests, come up here and we will go into the temple and shut the doors. They will not dare attack you there. Well, that sounds good to me, Nehemiah, right? Sounds safe. But immediately Nehemiah detects something is wrong again. He knows that he is not permitted to go into the temple, for only priests could enter the holy place. Let's look at his answer in verse 11. He says, but I replied, should a man like me run away? Would someone like me flee to the temple in order to save his life? I will not go. He realizes that a prophet who was really from the Lord would say nothing contrary to God's commands. Even though it sounded a little right, things weren't gelling with what he knew about Scripture. In verse 3, he said, I cannot come down. Now he says, I will not go. Okay? Having right priorities, church, gave Nehemiah the courage to do what was right. Courage isn't the absence of fear, but instead, it's the tenacity to do what is right, no matter how much we're afraid. There's going to still be fear there. It's not just a matter of saying no to distractions, right? We have to first say yes to the right things so that our priorities match up with what God's priorities are, okay? As we keep the main thing, we'll be able to deal with distractions the way Nehemiah did. God gives Nehemiah some insight in verse 12 through 13. Let's read that. It says, I realized that God had not sent him, but that he had prophesied against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. He had been hired to intimidate me so that I would commit a sin by doing this. And then they would give me a bad name to discredit me. It was all part of a plan to discourage and to distract the people from following Nehemiah's lead. Okay? Fueled by jealousy, fueled by ambition, these enemies slandered and tried to trick him into yielding into their demands. Okay? We must be aware of this kind of attack in our own lives, church. Don't take someone else's advice or do what a friend asks you to just because they seem like a nice person. Don't let anyone or anything distract you from God's priorities. Okay? Examine all things to Scripture. Nehemiah meets this attack of the enemy by going to prayer once again in verse 14. He says, remember Tobiah and Sanballat. Oh my God, because of what they have done, remember also that prophetess Noadiah and the rest of the prophets who have been trying to intimidate me. He's lifting them up. He's praying for them. He's asking God to remember them. So, this kind of brings us to the end, this point, to the end of the first phase of Nehemiah's work in verse 15 and 16. He says, so the wall was completed on the 25th of Elul in 52 days. When all our enemies heard about this and the surrounding nations saw it, our enemies lost their self-confidence because they realized that this work had been done with the help of our God. Wow. First off, 52 days to build the wall around Jerusalem, to rebuild it, that's huge. That just shows God's hand in it. Because they weren't just building the wall, right? They were removing the debris. They were bringing in the material. They were building it. And these were men who were not skilled masons or skilled craftsmen. Many of them were other professions. It's amazing to see. It says even their enemies had to admit that God was at work here. This entire project was finished in just 52 days. What a beautiful picture of the power of Christian witness in a community. Even their foes must agree that God was doing something, but the enemies are still not through. In these closing verses that we see how they continue their tactics of opposing and distracting. Let's read these last few verses, 17 through 18. It says, also in those days, the nobles of Judah were sending many letters to Tobiah, and replies from Tobiah kept coming to them. For many in Judah were under oath to him, since he was son-in-law to Shaniah, son of Ara, and his son Jehoanah, had married the daughter of Meshullam, son of Berechiah. A lot of tough names. But besides that, this is simply saying that Tobiah had intermarried with the Israelites. Taking advantage of that relationship, he was seeking to undermine Nehemiah's influence by nothing more than mere gossip, okay? As Nehemiah says in verse 19, moreover, they kept reporting to me his good deeds and then telling him what I said. And Tobias sent letters to intimidate me. Brothers and sisters, here's one of the overriding truths from this book that we can learn. We see that the devil, he never quits. He's not going to quit. He's not going to give up. Especially when we're still alive, right? God has wonderful blessings and much encouragement and joy for us along the way in our journey. But we must never cease battling against the world, the flesh, and the devil until what? Until we're at home, right? It's a constant battle. The enemy will never quit. If he cannot distract you with fear and flattery, he will use gossip and false accusations. So I'm going to go through a couple quick action steps we can take, church, as we close, we can apply these passages to our lives. I see really two. So the first one is practicing saying yes to God's priorities. So the best way to not be distracted is by being attracted to those things that are of the heart of God. Okay? Once we're aware of what these are and are attracted to them, we need to commit ourselves to a life of full devotion and complete commitment. I heard a story about a Native American who left the reservation to join his cousin who lived in the city. He said one day as they were walking down a busy street, the Native American said, "I hear a cricket." His city cousin was amazed because all he could hear was the traffic. After a short search, the man reached down and picked up the cricket. When he stood up, he pulled some change out of his pocket and dropped it on the sidewalk. The noise was no louder than the crickets, but immediately several pedestrians stopped and turned toward the sound. The man then turned to his cousin and said, "See, people hear what's important to them, right? They heard the money dropping, because that's important to us, not a cricket." So what are we hearing today, church? What's important to you this morning? Are you locked into God's kingdom purpose, or are you focused on a bunch of other things? The second one is practice saying no to the devil's distractions. I don't know what distractions you're facing, but it might be television, okay? That's a big one. I read this week that the average American spends 3 hours and 46 minutes watching TV every day. Okay? So that equals 52 days of nonstop TV per year. Okay? By the age of 65, the average American will have spent nearly 9 years watching TV. That's crazy to think about. And I definitely probably fall into that category. And it's eye-opening when you see those numbers in that way. That's 9 years of watching TV. That's crazy. I want to challenge you today to take some time and ask the Holy Spirit to help you identify what things are distracting. Maybe it's a friend, okay? An activity. Maybe it's money. Maybe it's a possession. Maybe it's your thought life. Maybe it's your job. It could be anything. When the Spirit makes it clear, church, decide how you can begin to say no to those things that are derailing you from what's most important. As I close, I found a fictional report of a worldwide convention that Satan and some of his demons attended. It said, in the devil's opening address to his followers, he said, "We cannot keep Christians from going to church, but we can steal their time. Let's keep them busy in non-essentials of life and invite innumerable schemes to occupy their minds. Let's keep them busy, busy, busy. And when they meet for spiritual fellowship, involve them in gossip and small talk so that they leave their troubled consciences and unsettled emotions. Let's crowd their lives with so many good things that they have no time to seek the best thing. Church, the enemy is going to attack. The enemy is going to distract us in many different ways. But while he blasts away at us with these distractions, God is still building his kingdom. Satan is subtle, but God is sufficient, okay? Remember, when God's priorities become our priorities, God's kingdom work will advance. When the wall was completed, verse 16 says, all the surrounding nations were afraid and lost their self-confidence because they realized that this work had been done with the help of our God. May that be said of us this morning in our lives, church. I invite you to rise with me as we close in a song, and then I will pray and we will be dismissed.